And but all the others live well into their ages.
Quite young children, if you had so many.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, you see, Tin was only 9 when I was born, and Lionel was 11, and...
So he died when he was 52?
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. And so she was left with 9 children, yes. Half of them still dependent.
Yes, and also, at the same time, trying to bring in money dressmaking and clothing her 9 children. And at the same time, Uncle Laurie, the oldest son, Doris was the oldest in the family, but next was Laurie. Laurie had had a shell go off behind him during the war, and they thought he'd never walk again, and he did. He walked with a limp, and he even worked again. But the shrapnel had punctured his lung. And so soon after my grandpa died, Laurie died of pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
And also Moy, Vi's younger sister Moy, had had meningitis from that Spanish flu. She was the only one of the whole lot of them, that great big family all crowded in, and only Moy got that Spanish flu. Mm-hmm. And they took turns nursing her night and day. And she was terribly ill, lost all her hair with this meningitis, went bald, and grew like a bean pole, skinny and long in bed. And it, so they, and then Uncle Gerald, who was only a year younger than Vi, he got rheumatic fever. He had rheumatic fever when his call-up papers came for World War II, and they gave him 6 months deferment after rheumatic fever. Then they put him out in the trenches, and of course he got it again, and he reported to sick bay, and they said he was malingering, and that he'd only go out if he went on a stretcher, which he did. He went out on a stretcher. And then he got rheumatic fever a third time. So it's not surprising he died in his 40s.
Mm. Did he die running for a train?
Yeah, he was running for a train the night before his wife, Auntie Biddy, was going to have her breast off. He was going to visit her that evening. And it was just the day before her operation. He was running through a train. He just
collapsed.
And that's when he worked for a bank. And that's where this bank manager phoned my Uncle Brian, who was British understatement, said, "I'm sorry to tell you, your brother has had a mishap." And, you know, Brian thought in terms of a sprained ankle or something. And he said, Brian said, "Oh, what's the trouble?" And he said, "Well, he's had a heart attack." And so Brian said, "How bad is it?" The bank manager said he didn't get over it. And I don't know if he thought it was telling him gently, but it was a sort of a...
Yes.
And... so that's
So with those 9, do you remember all the names of the 9 children?
Of the 9 children? Yeah. Oh yes, the that Vi family.
You've got them written down.
Yes, because you've got a family group of them later on. Yes. There was the oldest one was Doris, who married my Uncle Bertie, who was paralysed at the age of 19. He was in the trenches for a week. And I knew Doris and Bertie so well because they used to live at War Seals Mansion in Fulham. It was a great big place for married... victims of the war. And there were lots of children there. Doris and Bertie didn't have any, but I used to go and stay with them, And I used to feel ashamed of the fact that I had a father who was normal, and all the children I was playing with, their fathers were blind or had legs off or were paralyzed. I didn't feel one of them. I felt, you know, I mean, I didn't want my father to be like that, but I somehow felt that I was being too lucky in having a perfectly healthy father. And so that's where Doris lives. And I think one reason why I hate jigsaw puzzles is because they used to have these big rooms where these poor fellows would be sitting round tables, you know, and they'd have these enormous jigsaw puzzles, and you'd see these poor men trying to fill in a day, adding a piece here or there to a jigsaw puzzle.
And was she married to him before he was injured or after?
After. She met him, because Doris was always the one who was, well, Vi was shy, but Doris was very outgoing and had so many boyfriends and could have had the pick of so many. And she was visiting Uncle Laurie, who'd had his injuries, at the Stalingrata home up on Richmond Hill, and she met Bertie, and just against everybody's advice, she married him. And I think she had a terribly hard life. He was terrifically sociable and jolly and wonderful. You'll see photos of him in that black album. And I just loved visits from Uncle Bertie. But I think that when they were alone, he was, you know, he was the sort of person who never read a book, never had hobbies. Never paralyzed from the waist down. And he was very sociable and had been very active and interested in sports. And I think Doris had a very, very hard life. I think that also she had always been very slim, but soon after her marriage she became enormously heavy. I think she took to eating as an eating disorder, as a sort of a thing to do. And then in her 40s, she suddenly began crash dieting until she couldn't stop. And I think that she went down from 14 stone to 12 stone to 10 stone to 8 stone. And I saw her when she was 6 stone, and she looked as if she'd just come out of Belsen. And then she died at 48. And I think she died of what you would call it now is anorexia. She didn't have a name then.
Live much
past. No. And so Uncle Bertie had to move from the War Seals Mansions back into the Stalingrata, and he outlived Doris by some years. In fact, I took Bob to visit him when in 1946, and he was still in the Stalingrata. And then after a while, he had to have first one leg amputated and then the other leg amputated, and then he died. But it was sort of looking at it, it was a very tragic sort of life they had. And yet, I remember them as a child as such jolly people, you know, such good company. So that was Doris, the eldest, and then of course Laurie was the one who died at 27 from his war wounds, but because he died actually of pneumonia, you know, when I was 3, my grandma didn't get any pension,
right,
because she was
all First World War.
First World War. I grew up so conscious of war because of Uncle Laurie. And going to War Seals Mansions all the time.
And Uncle Bertie.
But I often think of what Ken's childhood was like, because he was 9 when I was born. Well, while he was a little boy, his father died, his brother died, another brother kept nearly dying of rheumatic fever, and Moy had meningitis. And there must have been no time for him at all, you know, as a little boy. He grew up under this cloud of tragedy. And Well, after there was Doris, Laurie, then Vi, and 11 months later, Gerald. Right. And then there was a gap of nearly 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so the family was divided into the big ones and the little ones.
Mm-hmm.
And Gerald was just that little bit younger than Vi. And because Vi was so terribly shy, they tried to keep her out of school so that she could start with Gerald.
Mm-hmm.
And the truant officer, or whatever it was, school inspector, caught up with them. And because he insisted that Vi had to start school, she was nearly six. So, Gerald had to start with her while he was still four. They made an allowance to look after her. And in no time, he was in a class higher than she was.
Really?
Yes. His Vi was very shy, and very, very shy. She was only in school till she was left today. She was 13. And, she was always eclipsed by Doris, too. Anyway, my grandma had these four children, and she was out with her four children, and somebody said, oh, what a nice family you have. Watch out, this is just the time you'll start your second family. And my grandma said, oh, not me. I've got all I want. Four is enough. But then Alan and Moy and Brian and Lionel and Penn. She did mean it. Because it was a terrible financial strain. And,
why did you do it?
Well, why indeed? The Victorians were a little dumb over certain things. Certain topics were so taboo, and I think she tried not to the best of her ability, but didn't know enough.
She was more successful on the second half than the first.
But she raised them all. They all survived, which is quite unusual for those days.
That is an achievement, isn't it?
Yes, she...
Did Ernest quite like having them?
Well, he was a wonderful father. I think he was I think they had their moments of difficulties. I can remember, you see, for one thing, she was under the eagle eye of his parents. You know, she had to get them dressed respectably to take all nine children to church, or it was such a disappointment and a disgrace to the old grandfather. That's why Vi hated Sundays. She said everybody looks different. Everybody went around in severe clothes with solemn faces and nobody laughed. And she can remember her grandpa carrying her out of church because once she was naughty, and she was in great awe of her grandpa. And the grandparents, that Vi's grandparents, were critical of the fact that she was having so many children, which was taking money out of the business, which didn't support them. And then they had this terrible catastrophe where, it was financial, but it was a tragedy anyway, that the man that my grandpa, of course, always had to pay into the workman's compensation for, you always have to pay into the workman's compensation in case of accident.
Mm-hmm.
But people would not pay their bills, and he was so behind with people paying the bills that just 1 week, he hadn't paid yet the compensation. Mm-hmm. And that particular week, this man who'd worked for him for years, the balcony gave way and he was killed. And my grandpa had to go to court and was sued for damages and had to pay what was a lot in those days, 14 shillings a week to the widow. I mean, it was a lot then, 14 shillings a week just after World War One. To the widow and children. And her Uncle Reg used to help pay that off from but the funny thing was, the wrong sort of rumour went around, because apparently one of the widow's daughters had an illegitimate child, and Once somebody said to my grandma, wasn't it good of your Uncle Reg to help with the payment for this girl, illegitimate child? So,
yeah.
And in Victorian days, that was,
there's only one explanation for helping for some illegitimate child.
Yeah.
And my grandma was still alive when I took John to England in 1949, mm-hmm. when you were 15 months. And
I saw
her. Yes.
Margaret Hutchins.
Yes, you saw her. And she saw you and was very bewildered by the fact because she was beginning to be senile. She remembered me when I came back from Canada, but every single day, she'd say, Moises, coming up the road with a baby. Now, where is he going to sleep? And she was terribly worried about this baby. She couldn't register that this was actually her
woman who had nine kids
great-grandchild. But
she probably thought she was being put upon
it. You might have. But she still had all her wits about her as far as knowing what to do about children, because I can remember handing John a great big rock cake, and she said to me, he'd manage that better if you cut it in half with a knife, which was quite true. And another time, when John was in a room, and I was sort of in the hall, and she came up to me, and she said out of the corner of her mouth, he's got the scissors. Mm. And so I, you know, she didn't sort of freak out or anything.
Mm.
But, she never did figure out where this baby had really come from. It was really bewildering.
Mm, right.
She unfortunately was too far, too old to realize and enjoy the fact that this was her first great-grandchild. Yes, well, I was the oldest of all these grandchildren. Doris had none, Laurie died and had none, Vi had Ned and me, Gerald had Paddy, who was 10 years younger than me, and Paddy was a first cousin to me and to Pat, who I married, my first marriage, because Gerald's wife, Biddy, was a sister to Pat's mother.
Oh.
So we each had Paddy was his first cousin and my first cousin.
Oh.
And he was living with Biddy, that's how I met him when I was 17.
Oh.
And we were married when I was 19 and divorced when I was 24.
Oh.